The Indulgences and Theses. Chapter 3. Leo X. The Pope who then sat in St. Peter's chair was not a Borgia, but Leo X of the illustrious family of the Medici. He was clever, sincere, full of gentleness and meekness. His manners were affable, his liberality unbounded, his morals superior to those of his court. Cardinal Pallavicini, however, acknowledges that they were not beyond reproach. To this amiable character he united many of the qualities of a great prince. He was a friend to the arts and sciences. In his presence were represented the first Italian comedies, and there were few of his time that he had not seen performed. He was passionately fond of music. Every day his palace re-echoed with the sound of instruments, and he was frequently heard humming the airs that had been executed before him. He loved magnificence. He spared no expense in festivals, sports, theaters, presents, or rewards. No court surpassed in splendor and in luxury that of the sovereign pontiff. Hence, when it was known that Julian Medici thought of taking up his abode at Rome with his young wife, "Thank God!" exclaimed Cardinal Bibbiena, the most influential of Leo's counselors. For nothing was wanting but a court of ladies. A court of ladies was the necessary complement of the court of the Pope. But to religious feelings Leo was quite a stranger. "He possessed such charming manners," said Serpi, "that he would have been a perfect man if he had had some knowledge of religion and greater inclination to piety, about which he never troubled himself much." Leo required large sums of money. He had to provide for his great expenses, find means for his extensive liberality, fill the purse of gold which he flung daily among the people, keep up the licentious shows of the Vatican, satisfy the numerous calls of his relatives and of his courtiers, who were addicted to pleasures, endow his sister who had married Prince Sibo, natural son of Pope Innocent VIII, and defray the cost of his taste for literature, the arts, and luxury. His cousin, Cardinal Pucci, who was as skillful in the science of amassing as Leo in that of squandering money, advised him to have recourse to indulgences. The Pope, therefore, published a bull, announcing a general indulgence, the produce of which should be applied, said he, to the building of St. Peter's, that monument of sacerdotal magnificence. In a letter given at Rome, under the seal of the fisherman, in November 1517, Leo requires of his commissary of indulgences 147 gold ducats, to purchase a manuscript of the 33rd book of Livy. Of all the uses to which he applied the money of the Germans, this was undoubtedly the best. Yet it was a strange thing to deliver souls from purgatory to procure the means of purchasing a manuscript of the history of the Roman wars. There was at that time in Germany a youthful prince who in many respects was the very image of Leo X. This was Albert, younger brother of the Elector Joachim of Brandenburg. This young man at the age of 24 years had been created Archbishop and Elector of Mentz and of Magdeburg. 2 years later he was made Cardinal. Albert had neither the virtues nor the vices that are often met with in the superior dignitaries of the Church. Young, frivolous, and worldly, but not without generous sentiments, he saw clearly many of the abuses of Romanism, and cared little for the fanatical monks who surrounded him. His equity inclined him to acknowledge, in part at least, the justice of the demands of the friends of the gospel. At the bottom of his heart he was not violently opposed to Luther. Capito, one of the most distinguished reformers, was long his chaplain, his counselor, and his intimate confidant. Albert regularly attended at his sermons. "He did not despise the gospel," said Capito. "On the contrary, he highly esteemed it, and for a long time prevented the monks from attacking Luther. But he would have desired the latter not to compromise him, and that, while pointing out doctrinal errors and the vices of the inferior clergy, he should beware of exposing the failings of bishops and of princes. Above all, he feared to see his name mixed up in the matter. Consider," said the confiding Capito to Luther, deceiving himself as many have done in similar circumstances, "consider the example of Jesus Christ and of the apostles. They blamed the Pharisees and the incestuous Corinthians, but they never named the offenders. You do not know what is passing in the hearts of the bishops. There is much more good in them than perhaps you imagine." But Albert's profane and frivolous disposition, much more than the susceptibilities and fears of his self-love, was destined to alienate him from the Reformation. Affable, witty, handsome, sumptuous, extravagant, delighting in the luxuries of the table, in costly equipages, in society of literary men, this young Archbishop Elector was in Germany what Leo X was in Rome. His court was one of the most magnificent in the empire. He was ready to sacrifice to pleasure and to greatness all the presentiments of truth that might have stolen into his heart. Nevertheless, even to the last, he evinced a certain resistance and better convictions. More than once he gave proofs of his moderation and of his equity. Albert, like Leo, had need of money. Some rich merchants of Augsburg, named Fugger, had made him advances. He was called upon to pay his debts. Besides, although he had monopolized two archbishoprics and one bishopric, he had not the means of paying for his pallium. This ornament, made of white wool, besprinkled with black crosses, and blessed by the Pope, who sent it to the archbishops as an emblem of their dignity, cost them 26,000, or, according to some accounts, 30,000 florins. Albert very naturally formed the project of resorting to the same means as the pontiff to obtain money. He solicited the general farming of indulgences, or of the sins of the Germans, as they said at Rome. Sometimes the popes themselves worked them, at other times they farmed them, as some governments still farm gambling houses. Albert proposed sharing the profits of this business with Leo. The Pope, in accepting the terms, exacted immediate payment of the price of the pallium. Albert, who was reckoning on the indulgences to meet this demand, again applied to the Fuggers, who, thinking it a safe speculation, made the required advance on certain conditions, and were named treasurers of this undertaking. They were the royal banders of this epoch. They were afterwards created counts for the services they had rendered. The Pope and the Archbishop having thus divided beforehand the spoils of the good souls of Germany, it was next a question who should be commissioned to realize the investment. It was at first offered to the Franciscans, and their superior was associated with Albert. But these monks wished to have no share in it, for it was already in bad odor among all good people. The Augustines, who were more enlightened than the other religious orders, cared still less about it. The Franciscans, however, feared to displease the Pope, who had just sent a cardinal's hat to their general Forli, a hat that had cost this poor mendicant order 30,000 florins. The superior judged it more prudent not to refuse openly, but he made all kinds of objections to Albert. They could never come to an understanding, and accordingly the elector joyfully accepted the proposition to take the whole matter to himself. The Dominicans, on their part, coveted a share in the general enterprise about to be set on foot. Tetzel, who had already acquired great reputation in this trade, hastened to Mentz and offered his services to the elector. They called to mind the ability he had shown in publishing the indulgences for the Knights of the Teutonic Order of Prussia and Livonia. His proposals were accepted, and thus the whole traffic passed into the hands of his order.